I'm going to call. It looks like the medical situation has been taken care of, so I'm going to call the February 21st meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. So I understand we have a couple special guests here. Just wanted to recognize them. I believe one's with Representative Vogel. Would you like to introduce your guest?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Nick Miller sitting back here. Nick is from Lakeville. He goes to Lakeville South. He actually lives in Elko Newmarket. He's a senior there, and he's shadowing me today, so hopefully I'll keep him entertained enough. And maybe as a committee we can do the same.
Sounds
Thank
good.
You.
Yep. And Mr. Gehring, I understand, has a guest as well.
Mr. Chair and committee members, so we in our office are hosting a fellow from the Humphrey Institute this session, and his name is Visa, and he's in the third row there. He's actually our counterpart office in the Cambodian Parliament. He's the Deputy Director of the Research Department of the Cambodian Parliament, so he does the same work that we do in our office, and we're hosting him this session.
Okay. Thank you both for being here. Appreciate it. Representative Fisher, would you care to go first here? Okay. Oh, actually, yes, I forgot. It looks like we have a quorum, so while you're coming up, I will look for a motion to approve the minutes of the February 19th meeting. Any takers?
So moved.
Okay, Representative Nelson moves the minutes. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. And before we get, we have a pretty full agenda today.
Thank you.
So I'm going to attempt to, and we have a few bills that have multiple testifiers on it, so I'm going to attempt to limit testimony to 2 or 3 minutes per person, just to kind of move this along here, but I want to make sure, I know there's a lot of people here who want to speak on a lot of bills, so I want to make sure they have every opportunity to do so. So I may at some point have to cut in and if they are exceeding the time limit and remind them. So, and then that includes members too. Representative Fisher, if you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. I appreciate the opportunity. We will try to be very succinct on this. The bill that's coming to you today is from work that came out of a last couple of years project that I was working with folks on both sides of the aisle on the American Disabilities Act. We know that not long ago we had the issue where a lot of frivolous lawsuits were being filed against small businesses, and they were in the situation where it was cheaper for them to settle out of court than going to court. One of the things that came up in the process is that we found out that many times a lot of the small businesses were assuming every time that they were getting their plans approved by a governmental agency or when they were being inspected that they were thinking that they were being inspected from all the ADA sides to make sure that they're being compliant or not. And what makes it worse is some governmental units do that, but a lot don't because they don't have the expertise. And so there was confusion out there, and sometimes the businesses that wanted to do the right thing didn't know they weren't doing the right thing because they thought they had the approval of government and all things were met. So we saw this as a problem. What we want to do is try to come up with a way that when businesses are going in, getting their licenses, when they're being inspected, when they're getting their building plans approved, knowing whether they're meeting ADA or not or what they need to do. And so what this is to do is to try to get a working a document that will be given out to businesses when they're coming in for their licenses, when they're getting inspected, when they're having their plans approved, to let them know what is covered and what isn't from the ADA side. So that way they've got clear understanding, okay, I need to make sure and check with somebody else if it's not being done. And I want to thank Representative Zerwas. He's been working with me on this. Appreciate his support and help on it. I think it's a great bipartisan effort we've got here, and I've got a couple testifiers, and I'll turn it over to them.
Sure. And before your first testifier speaks, I would like to move that House File 803 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Welcome to the committee. I happen to know you're Mr. Elwood, but if you could please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, that would be great.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. We worked on this issue for several years with Representative Fisher and many of the members here on both sides of the aisle, as he said. Legal Aid has a statewide division known as the Minnesota Disability Law Center, and its sole purpose is to advocate for and represent folks with disabilities. And so this is an issue that's very close to Legal Aid's heart. And so the benefit of this bill, we're in huge support of this bill because on two fronts. It's good for our clients because it will alert businesses about what they need to do to be in compliance with the ADA and Minnesota Human Rights Act, which is a good thing. And it's also good for businesses because when they are renovating their buildings and they get all the checks from the electrical inspection and the plumbing inspection and everything else, and then only to receive a couple of days later some lawsuit about because they're not in compliance with the ADA, and they're saying to themselves, what the heck? You just gave me the green light. I'm good to go. What is this? How can I not be in compliance? And it's simply a matter of because nobody told them. And this is a pretty simple bill, and I would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Representative Elkins, I understand you have a question. Is it for this testifier?
Well, both the author and the testifier. Is just a question. I was wondering, Mr. Chair, if the scope of this would include digital accessibility.
Mr. Elwood or Representative Fisher?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question, Representative Elkins.
Sorry, I was wondering if the scope of this would include digital accessibility.
Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chair and Representative Elkins, I don't believe it does. It's the physical access to the building.
Okay. We have at least two more testifiers on the list. Beth Cadoon. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to thank Representative Fisher for bringing forth this bill, as well as for his assistance in resolving some issues on legislation a few years ago. We worked with Legal Aid, the State Council of Disability, Minnesota Human Rights Commissions, and others a few years ago on trying to address this issue of ADA accessibility and some lawsuits that were occurring. This was an issue that was really identified at that time, which was already described by Representative Fisher. We're here in support of the bill. Certainly our businesses want to make sure we're in compliance with the ADA. Absolutely, we want to make sure our businesses are accessible to their customers, and that includes all their customers. And this is what we discovered is certainly a confusing area of the law. Many times a lot of technical issues dealing with ADA and what's in compliance or not. So this would be helpful for our businesses to make sure that they know really when they're doing their upgrades if they're in compliance or not. And this was a disconnect that we found. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Any questions for this testifier? Okay. I also have Cody Olson on the list. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself and proceed with the testimony.
Well, my name is Joan Wilshire. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Council on Disability. I'm Cody's boss.
Oh, sure. Thank you for being here.
I pulled rank. The Council on Disability, we've been in existence for 45 years, and it exists to advise the governor, state legislature, state agencies, and the public regarding disability issues. And on House File 803, the Council on Disability, we support this bill. It is an opportunity to really reinvigorate the discussion about making Minnesota accessible for everyone. We work with businesses every day, and our agency has really made available easy to understand information about the ADA and Minnesota Building Code combined. We regularly present to businesses across the state. Over the last 2 years, more than 1,600 people who represent businesses have attended presentations from Austin, Minnesota to Alexandria. There are still so much work that we need to do, however. We've not even really scratched the surface of the problem, and this is really represented by the increasing number of lawsuits that still continue to happen. The best way to prevent a lawsuit, however, is just make your space accessible. And so it is not difficult or really expensive for businesses to meet the letter of the law with their ADA obligations. And our agency can really assist on some of those basic needs. Now, NCD really has these tools and technical expertise to educate the businesses on the civil rights issue with disabilities, accessibility, and lawsuit avoidance. Now, to address the last concern that was brought up about digital accessibility, we address digital accessibility with all businesses besides the physical access. So just to kind of give you reassurance there. So we're excited to be a member of this work group, and as always, we're a resource to businesses and to all of you folks as well. So with your constituents, feel free to give us a call as they call you as well. Thank you for letting us testify here today.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill? Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Scott McClellan. I'm the Director of Construction Codes and Licensing and the State Building Official. On behalf of the department, I want to acknowledge our support of the bill. We have worked extensively with the Council on Disability over the years to partner on many different outreach and code-related items. We would have one suggestion that although in the bill, it does identify that administrative support would be provided by our department, the Department of Labor and Industry. We'd be happy to do that. However, with the inertia and the work that the council has already done with business owners and their database reaching out for the last couple of years with 1600, we believe that they would be better suited to act as the chair of this. So we would just suggest if that were amenable.
Okay. Thank you. Comment, Representative Fisher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one of the things that has come up in the last day or so, and yes, I would be very open to changing this as we go forward. I believe there's going to be another stop after this committee, and that I'd be happy to have that change from the chair from being the Department of Labor to the Disability Council. And I did hear from them earlier that they'd be very happy and honored to be able to be the chair of it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, are there member questions? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner, actually, we had an instance where we were making a bathroom accessible, but it was going through the VA, and their specifications were over and above what the Minnesota code was. I guess it was very strange, and we kind of questioned a couple of things like, really? This is just kind of odd, and it was very problematic for the customer that we were working for. So I'm hoping that because with the council as well, that can be an issue that we can go to and say, you know, I know the VA is requesting this, but do we really need to do it? Because it actually didn't make sense to us. Is that something that you could see happening?
Mr. McClellan.
Mr. Chair, a representative, certainly. Anyone can contact our agency at any time to see if what you're being asked to do is really a code requirement or maybe a requirement of the owner, or did you say Veterans Administration?
Yes.
Maybe a higher standard. They may have something above and beyond our code that the feds could obligate you to. But we'd be happy to clarify that for you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any additional member questions? Okay, seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 803 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Fisher, your bill is on its way.
Thank you.
I think I saw Representative Moran come in. Representative Chair Moran, would you like to come forward? While she's coming forward, I will move that House File 841 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Moran, I don't know if you were here at the outset. We do have a full agenda, so I'm trying to limit testimony from both the public and members to 2 or 3 minutes because there are a lot of people who want to speak on a lot of bills today. So I might be timing it, but so far nobody's gone over. Welcome to the committee, Chair Moran.
Right. So good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I do have a few testifiers.
Sure.
But I believe it will be short.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Proceed with your testimony.
Okay,
Chair
thank
Moran.
You. So the Women of Color Opportunity Act is a response to some legislation we passed in this body in 1314 called WESA, the Women Economic Security Act. And so within the Women Economic Security Act, it was really about how can we accommodate women in the workforce and make sure that we are creating processes that is representation of women who are currently in the workforce. Part of that, I carried a bill called a pay equity bill. And a pay equity bill was just to say that women, if someone comes to the state for a contract, that we at the state should have a certificate of compliance that states that those companies are paying women at the same rate as men. And we talked a lot about that women were making 80 cents to the dollar. And I heard that often and a lot. But the fact that white women are making 80 cents to the dollar, women of color are making 60 plus cents to the dollar. And if you're Latina, you're making about 57 cents to the dollar. So the Women of Color Opportunity Act was to kind of like address that inequities that we are seeing with women in color in the workforce. So women, Minnesota women of color are strong, resilient, and dedicated to their families and community, and an essential part of the Minnesota economic and social fabric. They are robust participants in the labor force. 75% of Hmong, African-American, African immigrant mothers with children are in the labor force. 65% of Mexican mothers, 62% of Minnesota Somali women, age 16 plus, are in the labor force. They are the primary family breadwinners. 80% of Minnesota Native Americans, African Americans, and African immigrant women with children earn the majority of the family income. They are small business owners. 1 in 3 women-owned business in the U.S. is owned by women of color. African American women are almost half of all African American-owned businesses. 37% of Minnesota Somali entrepreneurs are women, whereas only 22% of our state non-migrant entrepreneurs are women. Yet, women and girls of color face significant challenges. Minnesota African American and African immigrant women earn 62 cents to every dollar that a white male earns. Hispanic women are earning 75 cents to the dollar. Somali women are earning 54 cents for every $1 a white male earns. And a Hispanic woman working 4 times stands to lose almost $854,000 over the course of her career because of this wage gap. So I'm going to make sure, because I know we're busy. So the Women of Color Opportunity Act is a multi-pronged approach to increase opportunities for Minnesota's women and girls of color to succeed and prosper in school, in the workforce, and in small business ownership. So what you will see within the Women Economic Opportunity Act is a focus in those three areas: education, workforce development, small business development. And so I have a few testifiers. We're going to start off, because sometimes we want to figure out, well, how do this play out in real life? And what do this look like? And what do we need to do to work to reduce the disparities that we see around the state of Minnesota? And how do that play out within organizations who are doing great work to really transform the lives of girls, women, families, and community, because they are all interconnected. They don't stand alone. Mm-hmm. And so next to me, I have Giovanni Ford, who will speak about his organization.
Sure. Representative Quam, was your question for Chair Moran, or did you want to wait until testimony was over?
I was going to wait until the discussion of the language of the bill.
Okay, sure. Welcome to the committee, then. If you could please just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. My name is Giovanni Ford. I'm the founder and executive director of a family education center called the Network for the Development of Children of African Descent. We're based in Northeast Minneapolis, but serve children and families throughout the metro area. Much of our work around this issue of workforce development and education has focused in Ramsey County, where we have a contract with the county to work with African-American families who are participating in MFIP. Much of our work is about how to interrupt generational cycles of poverty. Many of the families that we work with come to us with big dreams about starting businesses, getting off the system. And what we have worked to do over the past 20 years is to demonstrate how to get at the root issues that get in the way and prevent families from actually doing for themselves. What we have found and learned is that working with the whole family, some would call it a two-generation approach, is critical. What we've found over the past 20 years is that often programs and policies will either target the child or the parent, but what we know is that if parents want to exit the system and they're called into the school day after day after day, they lose their job, right? And so we have found it very effective to work with children and families, focusing on literacy skill development for the whole family. Some of the results and impact that we've seen with families from Ramsey County is that African-American parents have a 300% increase in employment and engagement activities. They're more than twice as likely to actually exit the system than African-American families who are in the system who do not go through our programs. And so we're very much in support of Representative Moran's bill in that it's really looking to address the culturally specific and nuanced needs of women of color and their families. And honored to be here and speak on behalf of the bill.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Ford. Next testifier, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Lee Roper-Badker, and I'm the President and CEO of the Women's Foundation of Minnesota. And I'm honored to be here today to testify in support of the Women of Color Opportunity Act. And I want to thank Representative Moran for her visionary leadership in ensuring that we can have equal opportunity so that all the young women can thrive in this state. For 35 years, the Women's Foundation, as a statewide community foundation, has conducted research, which you'll find in your packets before you, made grants across the state, and advanced policy to create gender and racial equity. As Minnesotans, I think we all take great pride in our state. As a state, we're often ranked number one or number two in terms of quality life, educational attainment, and workforce participation. However, this success isn't true for all Minnesotans, and I think we're all aware that Minnesota ranks number two in the nation in terms of racial disparity. And just consider this one statistic. Representative Moran talked about the wage gap. Let's look at workforce participation in STEM and the workforce shortage facing our state. Right now, when you look at young people who have careers in science, technology, engineering, and math, we see that 80% of the workforce in those STEM jobs are held by men, 19% by white women, and less than 1% are held by women of color. So this legislation addresses that incredible disparity and provides future opportunity to young women, families, and to our state. I'm really pleased to introduce my colleague, Sonny Hernandez. She's the Vice President of Women's Foundation of Minnesota, and she's going to talk about why an appropriation for the Young Women's Initiative statewide internship program is one important solution to closing these disparities and building our state's future workforce. Thank you.
Yep, thank you, Ms. Roper-Badker. Ms. Hernandez, if you could come forward, please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Sonny Hernandez. I'm the Vice President at the Women's Foundation of Minnesota, and I'm the co-chair of the Young Women's Initiative Minnesota. On our most recent listening tour across the state, we learned that young women of color in Minnesota need to thrive by including opportunities for young women of color around business development, financial literacy, STEM careers, and better pathways to academic success and opportunities. And that's exactly what is laid out in the Women of Color Opportunity Act. As a result of our listening to young women and their communities, the Women's Foundation of Minnesota launched the Young Women's Initiative, which centers the leadership and solutions of young women of color to ensure their families, communities, and Minnesota thrives. The Young Women of Color Opportunity Act provides another important statewide investment. We know that young women are an incredible asset and they're indispensable in our state's future, and investing in equal opportunity through this act will benefit us all. The Young Women's Initiative is centered around a research-based blueprint for action, and that's in your packets. It's a set of recommendations for change from over 800 young women of color across the state, focused on ensuring that all young women can thrive. Two key recommendations are to create pathways and supports to education and job, and to invest in the leadership of young women through mentoring and paid internships. And the amendment to this bill will do just that, and we want to thank Representative Moran for her leadership on this. Now I'd like to introduce Brooke LaFlo, who's a member of our Young Women's Cabinet, who's the guiding force behind the Young Women's Initiative Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hernandez. Ms. LaFlo, if you could please come forward, just identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brooke LaFlo, and I am a member of the Young Women's Cabinet. I am grateful for the opportunity to sit in front of you as a young, educated woman deeply involved in my community. I am here because of rare opportunities that have been afforded to me and allowed me to obtain my master's in education by the age of 24. However, as a young Indigenous woman, I know my story is different than many of my peers, especially young women of color and Indigenous women like me. Only one of my childhood peers from my Indigenous community finished college. I have experienced the impact of missing and murdered Indigenous young women firsthand. In my young life on this earth, I have witnessed that potential is distributed among all of us, but opportunity is not. This is the reason I believe in this Young Women of Color Opportunity Act. We must increase pathways to education, success, careers, and entrepreneurship for young women like me so that our lives can reflect the potential and light we hold. I know many young women of color and Indigenous young women who just can't open the doors to equal opportunity no matter how hard they work. Here's what I do know. When we invest in young women of color and Indigenous young women, we bring our families with us, we bring our communities with us, and we bring Minnesota with us. We are the pillars of our families, and investment in us through this bill is an investment in Minnesota. I'm honored to come full circle and sit here in front of you and sharing my story to bring Indigenous young women and young women of color across the state into this room with me. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair,
yes, Chair
I believe there's an amendment in the package.
Thank you for reminding me. There is, yes. There's an A2 amendment. Is this an author's amendment?
It is.
Okay, I will move the A2 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author would like.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, looking at the A2 amendment, it looks like it's striking and adding language throughout the bill. Wondering if the author or if House nonpartisan staff can walk through the author's amendment quickly.
Chair Moran, would you like to do that, or would you? What's that, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, it would be fine if I don't have the amendment in front of me. So if the House research people can walk through it, that'd be great too.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the amendment does kind of one key thing throughout the different grant programs in the bill, and that is the way the bill is structured as introduced. It designates one grant to go to a recipient in Ramsey County and then also provides for grants at other locations outside of Ramsey County. This amendment takes out the designation for Ramsey County and instead provides that the grants would go to a number of people regardless of their geographic location.
Representative Zerwas.
Well, Mr. Chair, this amendment clears up a lot of our questions.
Sounds good. Is there anybody else who would like, I have the motion, so any further discussion on the amendment? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill?
No.
Okay, is there additional member discussion? Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moran.
I beg your pardon. Representative Quam was
Yes.
First, I'll call you,
Mr. Chair.
Any second. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and looking over this bill, I think it's a sort of an oversight, Article 4, 5, and 6, where it gets into the STEM careers, the academic success, and the non-traditional jobs. We've had some very good success in increasing college attendance for women. But one of the things that pops out is a very low percentage or proportionality between with boys and men of color, and that there don't seem to be anything to help assist because they're being left behind. And I like the testimony by Mr. Ford on this program, but this program addresses the community, and I think that the bill would be better if Articles 4, 5, and 6 address the community, because I think there are needs in the community. It's sort of a travesty with some of the young men of color that are being left behind. And I'd like them to participate in this effort and be included in those articles, because I think we can enhance what's being done by groups as the testifier Ford had. So that would be my hope, that we don't leave young men and of color behind.
Okay. Representative Moran, any comment?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kwan, I would agree with you. Right, our African-American men in our community has really been disproportionately impacted by systems and processes as long as I've been alive, or we could say since the beginning of the history of the United States. And so when you have a good program, as you see with Mr. Ford, that we realize that the importance of family, the importance of community, and that the wisdom of the solution often is valuable, and what needs to happen to create better outcomes is definitely important. I just left my jobs committee this morning, where there's organizations that I am really, really excited about called the Ujamaa Place, who's doing like an excellent work specifically for African-American men, right, with a whole wraparound type of services that they do. And I think in the state of Minnesota, we need programs that focus on African-American men, on African-American women and girls and boys, right? We need those type of programs. All are important, all are valuable, but as an African-American woman who also know that I and so many other women of color bring so many skills to the table, but yet we are only paid at 60 plus cents to the dollar, those inequities bothers me, because often we are leading in the household while we're also supporting our men, right, and to allow a system that also support our men.
And Representative Kwan?
Thank you. When I'm referring to men of color, it's not just African-American men. There are several communities from Asia, immigrant communities and others that also have some of these same issues and concerns. There are Native American communities that also have these issues and concerns. So I'm not limiting it to one group of color, but these programs, I think the big thing they do is they give the spark of hope and dreams when they see, hey, I can do that. Others are doing that, and it's a great message. And I think it actually hurts the message when there's something going on and some people are said, oh, I'm sorry, you can't be included in the programs, because that's reinforcing that they aren't as important. And I think that especially these educational components, which reach the youth and young people, need to show uniform accessibility, and that they too can have the same expectations, dreams, and I could do that. And I just really, when we have a very, a narrower program, I feel for the kids that are in school now, that we don't reinforce that, that's just not for me. So I hope that your bill, as it moves, I hope as your bill moves that it can be a more inclusive and add that spark to the whole community. And thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kwan. And this bill does have one more stop. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moran, I just had a couple questions about the if you refer to the second page on 2.3. It says income does not exceed 80% of the area median income. I just wonder if you could expand exactly what the area is, and maybe what the dollar amount is in that area for what 80% of the median income is.
Okay, could you please reference what?
Yes, please. Which line are you on?
2.3.
Right here. Oh, 30. I heard 2.0.
Oh, I'm sorry. 2.30.
Okay, 2.30. Chair Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So I mean, that would, I mean, 80% of the area median income would be 80% of whatever that area or that community median income would be.
Okay.
And that varies, right? In my community, the median income is about $34,000 a year, right? In your district, the area median income could be something different. But whatever that may be, it would be 80% of that median income. Mm-hmm.
Representative Heinrich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yes, how is that geography exactly defined? Would it be, like, before we had, I think, the Ramsey County language was amended out of the bill, and so I thought maybe it would be, include just Ramsey County. But so you're saying for sure it's not a statewide median income. It's more confined to the area of where the business owner lives or where the proposed business is going to exist?
I'm calling for some.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself for the record and just answer the question.
For sure. Sarah Erickson, committee members on behalf of the Women's Foundation. That's a really great question, and I don't know that it's something that we had completely thought about, and that's something that we will work with the Department of Employment and Economic Development on to figure out an answer at our next committee stop.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
One more question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And then refer you to 2.9 and 2.10. It says under F, women of color means female. This is definitions. Means females 18 years of age or older who are American Indian, Asian, Black, or Hispanic. I just wanted to make sure. I was wondering if there's a woman of color that's left out of that. I don't see Middle Eastern or country of India. It says specifically American Indian. So I know that there's people, you know, in that community possibly that are Indian, of Indian descent, or even Middle Eastern, and I just don't know if you know, unintentionally might be excluding some people that you certainly want to include.
Chair Moran?
Chair, there is no intentions to try to exclude anyone from an opportunity, from this opportunity. It does state for individual ethnicities, but we can work on expanding that language because the intent is not to exclude.
Sure. Representative Heinrich?
That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Nash?
I have a quick, you have a response?
Oh,
yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Lee Roper-Badker. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative, for your question. According to what we base our research on is government data, and the government data, anybody who would be from India or from the Middle East would fall under the category of Asian American. So nobody is excluded.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, just a couple questions. And in line 2.29, you are talking about how awards are preferenced. And in 2.31, you're talking about that loans may not be denied based on credit rating, credit or a lack of credit rating, personal assets. So you've got a blank appropriation and no exculpatory loan guarantees. I'm just wondering how, if there were to be a default, and I hope there isn't, but if there were to be a default, how does the state go about recouping what that might be?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Moran.
Yeah, Representative. So one of the things that we find often in communities of color is that in new immigrants and refugees is that they are not often eligible for traditional loans, right? They bring experience and expertise. Sometimes they're digging into their 401ks if they have one. They're borrowing from relatives. And so we want to create a process where we are, where we recognize that and we know that, and that we create a process where we are can see people's hopes and dreams and be able to invest in that through a small loan and not let the traditional model be a barrier to access.
Representative Nash?
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair. And I recognize that we're the financial purview we don't have. But the policy, since we're enabling the policy, is still of interest to me. So on 3.1, you talked about there not being personal savings, and yet you just mentioned a 401k. I'm just confused a little bit because I certainly want to give people a hand up if they're going to, you know, if they need it, and I certainly think there's a compelling case for that. But if there's no mechanism to get repaid with a blank appropriation that you're asking for, from a fiscal responsibility perspective, I think that it's probably not untoward of us to ask, what is that mechanism? And would you be willing to put something in the bill to go down that road to talk about how we would go about that? Because, you know, Representative Vogel's a banker, and I'm not sure that Representative Vogel would probably write a loan of any substance with no definition of, if something were to happen, how does that get paid back? And I think I like the intent of your bill, but mm-hmm. that mechanism seems really important. And it's not trying to make it more difficult, but I think that if we're going to invest taxpayer dollars into this, that we need to be able to say to our constituents back in our district, whether we vote for this or against this, we know how this is going to be repaid.
Representative Nash, maybe House Research can answer this, but my understanding is that the state is not on the hook for these loans. It's the organizations that might be. That might receive the grants. Is that perhaps you could clarify that, Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash. So the way this is structured is that the state would provide grants to organizations who would then issue the loans. So the state grant money is not coming back to the state in the form of loan repayments. The loan repayments would be going back to the organization that received the grant.
And
follow up, Chair Moran.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Nash. One of the things that we know, even when we began to invest in women of color who are interested in starting small businesses, that a lot of the work is done with the support of those organizations, the underwriting, the technical assistance, the support, the walking of the hand-to-hand to ensure that they have the necessary tools to be effective at starting a small business. There are many organizations. We have like Women Ventures. This is what they do. When they look at women and women entrepreneurs, they have a wonderful, awesome program that really is tailored towards women specifically. There's another one that I was just in another committee hearing that I can't remember at this moment. But this is like for, we know in communities of color that there are huge barriers from us being able to access the traditional loans, and creating this process where we can grant money out to organizations who can do the full support necessary to ensure that women are being successful is really important. So I think another one is the AEDS, the African Economic Development Solution, who have also gotten grant monies to do a really good job of supporting women entrepreneurs.
Thank you, Chair Moran. We do have three more bills after this, so if members could, we do have this committee room for a little, we can go a little bit late if necessary, but if members could keep their questions fairly quick, preferably not to the financial aspects of the bill, as well as the responses quick, that would be great. Representative Nash, you look like you might be done. Okay, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I realize we're not a finance committee, but going back on this, I'm looking at 2.31, and this is a policy issue because it's going to determine how this thing is going to be run. It says loans must not be denied based on a poor credit rating, but then in 3.5 through 3.8, it says loan recipients must be free of outstanding tax liens involved in bankruptcy, not have any personal accounts in default, any past due bills. All of those things are going to lead to a poor credit report. So to me, it seems to be kind of mutually exclusive that you can't deny because of it, but yet you're saying you can't make because of it. So I'm wondering to the author, how is that reconciled?
Chair Moran.
Mr. Chair, so what it says is solely on poor ratings, right? Solely on poor ratings. You cannot be not be denied solely on poor credit. And this is a really good question. But what we do know is that, you know, there are investors who are willing to invest, but they want to minimize the risk of that investment, right? So you want to, and these are some of the things that these organizations do, right, to before grants are really given to individuals. They're working with them on cleaning up the credit. They're working on them or around the importance of a savings account. They're working on the things that you see here. Those are the things that they work with. Yes, we don't want an outstanding tax lien. I mean, those things can really, you know, hamper people's ability to be efficient at their own business. So we don't want to say that, well, because you have bad credit, which is definitely way beyond, you know, looking at an outstanding tax lien or something like that. I think that's something that we would want and hope that that has been cleaned up.
Okay. Representative Vogel?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there a relevance for having 2.31 in there?
Chair Moran?
Yes, I believe it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the relevance is?
The relevance? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Okay. The relevance is that we don't want an individual to be denied credit, right, based solely on their credit rating, right? For the traditional loan, and for those who are bankers in this area, that traditional rating may need to be at, maybe at 830, right? But for this non-traditional loan pathway for women of color, if you have a credit rating at 630, 710, you know, I'm not the Department of Deeds, you know, and I'm sure this is something maybe the Department of Deed can answer a little bit better. But it may be something that that organization is willing to take that risk on based on many other factors that they see that this individual is doing well.
Yeah. Representative Vogel.
Or has the capacity to do well.
Thank you, Chair Randy. Yeah, Representative Vogel, it does seem possible to have a credit rating, but not current, that's not maybe perfect, but still not currently be in bankruptcy or have an outstanding tax lien, but it could happen because of behavior, because of things that happened 10 years ago. Representative Vogel?
Thank you. Just one more question then, Mr. Chair. As I'm reading through this, there seems to be no assumptions or any language that deal with charge-offs, and this could indeed occur, especially when you have conflicting language. I'm wondering where the accountability is per organization. So let's say we have one organization that does a really good job and gets the money back, and another organization that's maybe not quite as thrifty on this and is charging off a bunch. How are you going to control that so that, especially with language that seems to be a little bit nebulous, that there are some guidance in there relative to these organizations, because it sounds to me like somebody could make this almost a little bit like a grant program and somebody else is treating it like a loan program. I don't see anything in there that defines anything.
Chair Moran, quick answer.
It's terrifying, Bert. So the question is whether or not it's a grant program or a loan program, or what is the question, Representative Vogel?
Mr. Chair, the question is, where is the accountability in here for the organizations? Because one, if they treat it more leniently, it becomes a grant because it's going to be a charged off loan. Another organization might take underwriting very seriously, want to make it a revolving loan fund, and therefore it continues. How are you putting in here any constraints on anybody to be a good underwriter and keep the money intact?
Chair Moran.
Thank you, Representative Chair. It is my intention and the intentions of the organization that which will get this appropriation, that they are in good standing, that they are a reputable organization where this part of which this part of the bill is what they do as an expertise, and along with that comes standards. It is important to us, it's important to me, and it's important to women of color that we have processes in place to ensure that we are treating state dollars with diligence, but also that we are promoting the ability for women to have an opportunity to be the entrepreneur, to be the small business owner, to be the job creators, to stop the generational poverty that we see happening within the state of Minnesota, and to be accountable.
Thank you, Chair Moran. Representative Lee, quick comment, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Just want to say thank you to Representative Moran for bringing this forward to really highlight the inequities that, you know, our women of color, indigenous women, do face, you know, in society. And as a man of color, just to address that point, you know, for myself, I do acknowledge that I have certain privileges as a man of color that's different from the women of color and, you know, the woman in my own community group. And so I really hope that members at the table will understand that. And one example, just to share, I have a high school teacher who actually teaches in Representative West's district. She reached out to me, you know, she had a high school senior who got accepted to University of Minnesota, and it will have been a full ride for her and based on if she stayed on campus. And the teacher actually reached out to me saying that, hey, I have Hmong students who really want to go to college and, you know, participate in this program and get the free full ride tuition and everything like that. But my parents, because of our cultural background and some of our traditions, living off campus is not an option for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a Hmong man and as a man of color, I realize that I have more opportunities myself to go to a school that's not, you know, within 25 miles of where I live. And, you know, that was a barrier that my siblings, who all of us are first-generation students, who have to break in order to even pursue higher education, and now they all have, you know, higher degrees. And so I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward. And we do realize that, you know, within our communities of color and in our indigenous communities, there are different disparities and barriers that are out there. And I really want members, you know, when we have this conversation, really to, you know, to connect with all of our members who are from these communities to really understand where we're trying to come from. And just to address the issue about the financial part, Mr. Chair, just wanted to touch briefly on that. I feel like the language in here, you know, it is definitely needed, and that's why we have Article 3 in here to actually have financial literacy. You know, I myself, when I was growing up in my district, I never took any financial course, and at an early age made some pretty bad financial decisions, and so I don't think that I have the best, you know, credit score out there. But this is what this bill is doing. You know, how could we create opportunities for folks who may not have access to financial literacy or that capital to really tap into some of the resources that we have available at the state for them to really pull themselves up and, you know, really pursue what they want to do. So I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Lee. I don't have any additional member questions. Okay. Representative Moran, any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present the Women of Color Opportunity Act, which does include Indigenous women, too. And I just want to thank Representative Lee for your remarks that reminded me that within communities of color, the inequities between men and women are there also. And so it's really important for this bill at this time, for the purpose that is intended, to focus on women of color. Thank you so much, members.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you, Chair Moran.
And I hope you have your support.
Sure. I will renew my motion that House File 841, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Your bill is on its way. I'm going to see if I can fit one bill in quickly here. We'll see how that goes. Representative Dean.
luck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. And this bill has already been heard in the election subcommittee. So I'm going to try to, hopefully there's no testimony. I will see if there's anybody who needs to speak on it.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg.
And
if
I will
someone
move
could
that,
move my bill.
Yep, I will move that House File 489 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 489 does what we have done previously. In 2014, we funded actually bus rides within the metro area for fixed bus routes for Election Day, just as we have beer companies supporting rides on St. Patrick's Day and other types of events. This is where we're sitting up, stepping forward as the state of Minnesota and saying that voting is important, and so we're going to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to get to the polls. It's not a complicated bill. After elections, I did have some conversations with Representative O'Driscoll, and just to inform members, and maybe this will cut off some of the in-depth discussion, I am scheduling a meeting with Commissioner of Department of Transportation, Anderson Kelleher, to begin to look at what happens outside of what is the Metropolitan Council's area of bus coverage. So looking at areas like Moorhead, possibly Austin, St. Cloud. I know that previously the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage worked with the city of Duluth, and on Election Day, Duluth actually provided free transportation on Election Day, which still leaves some parts of the state that may be left out, and we'll begin to have those conversations on what that looks like, what are areas of the state that actually provide certain types of on-need transportation, and how that might relate to making sure that individuals have the opportunity to attend their polling place on Election Day should they so choose. We also have provisions throughout the state where certain size jurisdictions are able to do mail-in balloting. So this is about bus rides on Election Day free within the Metropolitan Council provider area, but beginning to look at the scope to make sure that everybody in the state of Minnesota has the opportunity to vote on Election Day. Okay. Or prior to Election Day.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Dean. Is there anybody who did not get the opportunity to testify in the election subcommittee who would like to speak on this bill? Okay. Seeing none, I have a couple member questions. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I serve as the lead on the election subcommittee, and I had several questions on this when we were in committee, and I haven't really heard an answer for them yet. I live in the seven-county metro area. Some might think that we are in the sticks, and that's debatable, but there are no buses that serve my district's cities, not one, except for maybe Carver. They have a bus stop there. But City of Waconia, where I live, no buses. City of Norwood Young America, no buses. Hamburg, no buses. So you are, Representative Dean, you're asking to fund things within the Metropolitan Council's footprint in the seven-county metro, and we've got no consideration for my people whatsoever, and that's bad policy. So we're writing a bill, we're forwarding a bill to create this policy for free bus rides to get people to the polls with no consideration for Carver County at all, yet we're in the seven-county metro. And I just think that is a problem. And I think, Chair Dean, you know, this is something that you need to work on if this is going to become law, because it is grossly unfair to the citizens of Carver County. And I would imagine Scott County as well. Representative Vogel, you've got folks out there. There's no buses that are going to come and pick people up in Elko New Market, drive them to the polls. So seven county metro area footprint, Metropolitan Council jurisdiction, no accommodations. That is a bad piece of policy, and I would urge you to vote no to move this on. I just think this is bad policy.
Mr. Chair,
Chair
and Representative Nash, I would hope that you would have listened closely to my statement regarding this, and that I'm currently working with Representative O'Driscoll and with the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation to alleviate some of your concerns. This isn't a perfect bill for everybody in the state of Minnesota, as virtually none of our bills are. This is something that we've done before, and there weren't many issues associated around it previously. So I would just hope that members of the committee would support this, and we can move forward.
Okay. Representative Nash?
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. But, Mr. Chair, we're dealing with the bill that's in front of us in the language format that we have today in front of us. We can't vote a bill out saying, well, you know, I promise to work with you, and I pledge my undying fealty towards this. That's not what we're dealing with. We got this bill right here, right now, the way it is. It's bad policy. Doesn't take into consideration Carver and Scott County and members. I would urge that we not move this forward, because if it comes to the floor and if it were to become law, you're essentially disenfranchising people purposely, because you knew about the issue and we haven't addressed it. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I noticed the author forgot about the third largest city, Rochester, when talking about the different cities. And Rochester, I believe you've got a nephew or a cousin that I've had some conversations with that's down there. But I remember, I think more than one election cycle of where they've publicized on the TV and radio free rides to the polls. I don't think they're at 100% capacity on their buses. And I'm just surprised that the Met Council, with all of the buses and activity that's going on, hasn't already done this on their own. And you know why the state, since other entities fulfilling that function have a habit of actually doing this service to the community. I'm just surprised that we're asking the state to do it for the Met Council when others can do it on their own.
Any comment?
Just Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, I didn't leave Rochester out. I gave you examples of cities like those in Minnesota, so it was never my intention to say that Rochester. And I think that as we think about Election Day and the importance of making accessibility to the polls important, that we do look at the larger metropolitan areas, but as I mentioned earlier, discussions around what do we do for those areas that don't have bus service. And I believe that that's important. This is what I can do right now. That doesn't mean that this is the only thing I want to do. I absolutely want to make sure that we get access to polls for people throughout the state of Minnesota. As I mentioned, there are many different tools beyond just bus service that help people vote in the state of Minnesota, and I think that that's what we should think about moving forward. And it's a nephew, Representative.
Okay, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if you could lay out the bill path for House File 49, I think that'll be helpful for members to see where this bill is. I know it's been heard in elections. It was referred here. What's the rest of the path for the bill?
The motion is to re-refer it to Ways and Means. My understanding, Chair Dean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the chair of the transportation
that's
division
correct,
wants
Chair.
Is planning on hearing it there, so I assume that's where it will get referred by Ways and Means. Representative Zerwas?
Okay, and perhaps the author of the bill can. This will probably be addressed in transportation as well, but just looking at it's a pretty short bill. We're looking at 15 lines of text. Nowhere in here, Representative Dean, is anything about how we pay for this and how this is being paid for. So we're asking for free rides to come out of these budgets, and you're going to talk to the commissioner of the Department of Transportation about rural transit providers providing free routes on Election Day. Those operating margins are pretty thin in greater Minnesota. So I'm wondering how I don't see an appropriation in here, and I'm just wondering how this is proposed to be paid for. Or are we just expecting providers to just not recoup any costs?
That sounds like a finance question, Representative Zerwas, but Representative Heaney, if you have any brief comment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, a financial note has been requested. Previously, when this done, it was broken up into costing per year, which would be per election. The per year cost, I believe, was somewhere around $60,000 to $70,000. So the election cost was roughly $140,000.
Okay, Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean. So it's your intention then in transportation finance to have an amendment for this bill to include an appropriation? Is that your intent at this point?
Chair Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas.
I mean, I just don't see any appropriation language.
No. And previously, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, we did not appropriate money directly for this, although we did increase the funding to Met Council through for Metro Transit to actually accommodate the gap that's left in their funding. So, I mean, could I add an appropriation to this specifically for it? I absolutely could. We have it in the past, and that's why it isn't done this time.
We are getting a little afield of the jurisdiction of the Government Operations Committee, but Representative Zerwas?
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, if we have a piece of legislation before us that's asking for transit providers to do more and to do it at no cost and nothing in the bill to cover that, I think that's probably within the purview. As we ask people to do more, and as the author has stated, he's going to ask rural transit providers to do more. Those rural transit providers aren't on fixed routes or schedules. They do pick up to drop off per call routes, and so that's asking whom we oversee to do more. There's no appropriation in the bill. I think we're perfectly in line to ask how that's going to happen, how that's going to work. Mr. Chair, I'll wrap up here. I have concerns really about the, if you look at statewide races, campaigns, and statewide turnout on Election Day, we need to make sure that what we're doing is equitable across the entire state. And we see a giant transportation network, including buses, trains, and a pretty sophisticated transportation system ready to be turned on in the metropolitan area. And quite frankly, in my neck of the woods, in Sherburne County, if someone wanted to use public transportation to go to the polls, they could put a call in 2 to 3 days in advance, request that the river rider come by their house. It just doesn't work the same. And so we have huge concerns about equity when it comes to programs like this. That and not having the expectation that this is going to be paid for in the bill, we just have some concerns. At this time, Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call on House File 49.
Okay. Thank you. A roll call has been requested. Representative Elkins, brief comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification here to the author. My understanding, my reading of this is that it does include the suburban transit providers.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Elkins, yes, it does.
Okay, so that does include Southwest Transit and Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, which do serve portions of Carver and Scott counties, probably not all the way out to Representative Nash's district, though.
Representative Nash, I'll let you cut in since it looks like you have a comment to this
point. I might. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, hopefully you'll keep my allowance in mind and when you're thinking about the brevity of your comment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Elkins is correct. We do have opt-outs, but there are no opt-outs providing any service to the cities that I articulated. Mm-hmm. So you can say that you want to put money in for them, and you can, again, say, well, this covers the opt-outs. If they don't run a bus there, it doesn't matter. So vote no.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, my question is more has to do with that day of free rides. I could foresee if this became law that demand would skyrocket that day, and then also how would there, but what mechanism would there be to essentially profile riders to, in the sense that are they actually going to vote, or are they just going to maybe jump on the bus or the train or whatever for a free ride? How do you ensure that people are in fact going to the polls on the free transit day?
Okay, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Representative Heinrich. There's no verification. We assume that people in Minnesota are good people. If they need to get on a bus, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that that was meant to be funny. That if individuals need a ride to the polls and they have bus service that can get them there, they will use that bus service. There's nothing that prohibits from someone out in Maple Grove driving to the park and ride and getting on the bus to go to their job in downtown without paying a fare, but I will bet you dollars to donuts that probably 98% of those people who may use that transit service currently already have monthly passes. So it's not like an added cost to the system. That cost is already paid for, as well as we've done this previously, and there was no huge increase in the amount of riders. It was a couple riders here and a couple riders there. So when we talk about the impact of this, this is really trying to target a group of people that live in situations to help them get to the polls. Many of them don't have cars. Many of them don't have other people that can assist them. And we use regular transit because that's a system that's already in place. So
thank you. Thank you, Chair. Representative Heinrich?
Just one, I guess, so the people that maybe don't have cars or the I don't know if it's a geographical area or a specific group that you said targeting certain people, what would the payment be for just that day? So they don't have a pass, they don't normally ride. What's the average? I just don't know, I guess, in downtown, if you're to hop on a bus to go to the polls, what does that cost an individual?
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative, current fares are $2.50. I believe you have a period of roughly 2.5 hours to use. On some elections, individuals will stand in line at polls and could take more than that time. So ultimately, that would cost them $5 in a typical situation. That's roughly the fee and the cost.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Elkins, quick
Very
question.
Quickly, yes, I would just observe that periodically Metro Transit does have free fare days, like St. Patrick's Day, which are sponsored typically by beer companies, and so it should be pretty easy for them to estimate what the fiscal impact would be before this bill gets to transportation.
Okay. Thank you. That sounded more like a comment. I don't have any other members on the list. Okay. Seeing no others, a roll call has been requested. So I will renew my motion that House File 489 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez. Representative Cagle.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Pawlowski. Representative Sauk.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Zerwas.
No.
Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Quam.
Yeah.
Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
No.
Okay. There being 9 ayes and 8 nays, the motion is adopted. Chair Dean, your bill is on its way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Yep. Representative Zhang, I greatly appreciate the patience of you and your testifiers. If you could please come forward.
Huh.
And again, just as I've mentioned, you know, we have a lot of people testifying. I think there's some interest in this bill in particular. So I'm just going to ask people testifying to keep their comments to 2 or 3 minutes or thereabouts. Representative Zhang, and I will move that. Oh, wait, I understand you have an amendment too.
Yes, the author's amendment.
So, let's see. I guess I should. I will move that House File 919 be re-referred to the veterans, to the Committee on Veterans.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative Zhang is a freshman, is he not? And I believe this is his first bill in front of our committee.
thank you
just
for that.
Just seeking clarification, if I could.
Yes. I have made it very clear to members that they are not expected to do this. It can be quite a cost. We make enough to be comfortable, but we don't, you know, we're not working at downtown law firms or anything like that, so I don't see it as fair for members of either party to be expected to bring treats. If you have a concern with that policy, please take it up with me and not with Representative Zhang. So, and I expect you to take it up with me. So I will move that House File 919 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Veterans, and I will then move the A19-0047 author's amendment to put the shape in that Representative Zhang would like the bill. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion carries. The bill is in the form you'd like it. Representative Zhang, if you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Government Ops Committee. And sorry to Representative Nash. I do owe him a bowl of pho, and so we will be going out for one. But thank you for giving me this opportunity to present this bill. House File 919 is a bill that seeks to remind Americans and Minnesotans that the United States is a country that does not forget its friends, especially friends that fought alongside American soldiers for the values that this great nation stands for. To give a bit of a background to House File 919, on March 23, 1961, the newly elected President John F. Kennedy introduced the small and unknown country of Laos to the American public. President Kennedy also detailed the impending conflict in Southeast Asia that would soon culminate into the Vietnam War. Little did the American public know that that same year, in 1961, the American CIA began the training of over 40,000 Hmong soldiers in the northern mountains of Laos. The Americans had chosen to support and train the Hmong because the Hmong lived in the mountains that overlooked the supply lines of the communists that were using them. And the Hmong warriors fought a style of warfare that could counter the communist insurgency inside Southeast Asia. However, more importantly, the Hmong and the Americans fought side by side against the communists in Laos because we both share the same values that America represents. And so for 14 years, from 1961 to 1975, the Hmong and the Americans fought the communists in Laos together. Unfortunately, on May 14, 1975, the overall command structure of the Hmong forces inside of Laos was terminated, and the Americans left Laos in Southeast Asia. The aftermath of May 14 resulted in the fall of Laos to communism and the systematic persecution of Hmong men, women, and children thereafter. The communist regime of Laos sought to punish the Hmong for fighting alongside the Americans, and soon one Hmong village to the next was targeted for re-education or elimination. This eventually led to the mass exodus of well over 200,000 Hmong from Laos into neighboring Thailand. And the Hmong veterans who fought alongside the American soldiers and pilots followed their American friends to start a new life in America after their lives in Laos were destroyed by the new regime. And this bill comes before the highest lords of the land here in Minnesota because the state is home to the second largest Hmong population in America. The ACS survey estimates that there are over 72,000 Hmong Americans living in Minnesota at this moment. And the Twin Cities has the largest concentration of Hmong Americans in the nation. And in this legislature, we also have six legislators of Hmong descent who proudly serve this state. And we have one member on this committee, Representative Lee, who is from the Hmong American community. And today, members, with that a hope that House File 919 will be looked upon favorably so that May 14 will become a day of recognition for the veterans' services here in Minnesota, and that those who fought for the American values and shed blood to defend the values of this great country will be honored by all Minnesotans. And to share a little bit of a personal story for this, I would not be here if it was not for these veterans. My grandfather was a veteran. He was taught by the Americans to jump out of a plane before he learned how to ride a bicycle. And they did that because they were fighting for freedom and trying to defend their country. And I know that no matter what title I may hold as a state rep or city council member or whatever it is, I am still the son, as Senator Marco Rubio had laid out in his speech for the Cuban exiles, and as a politician in Florida, you know, regardless of what titles me or Representative Lee might hold, we are still the son of exiles and heir to two generations of unfulfilled dreams. And today, these veterans are here seeking your recognition as the highest lords of this land to recognize their service and their sacrifices. And many of them here today, it was a struggle for them to come out today. But they know that it is important to them and the community that they come from, and they want to continue to serve America, to be recognized for their service. And I hope that I will receive your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. I understand there was a translator who was supposed to be here, wasn't able to make it, so you will be serving as translator?
Certainly.
Okay, yeah, I'll allow a little leeway on time, just since presumably
it'll
take twice as long.
Yeah, so I have here with me is the president of the Law American Veterans for SGU, and Mr. Tong Vang will speak to it, but yeah.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please, Mr. Vang, if you could please state your name for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and Member of the House, my name is Tong Vang. I am the National Chairman for the FGU in the USA. It is an honor for me to speak in front of you in this morning. I would like to brief you about the history of the Secret War in Laos for 14 years, but maybe only take a few minutes to go over and will not detail. Beginning in 1961, the country had civil war, and the Pathet Lao keep pushing from the north of Laos to south. So General Wang Pao and the rest of the people who are not slender to be a communist and moving in south. But USCAA Jing West Belay, he stopped by and halfway to meet with General Wang Pao and ask him to help to stop flooding to south. And the CAA agreed to provide weapon, ammunition, food, and General Wang Pao agreed to provide people to stop the communists to moving to south. Before that, General Wang Pao asked Belay to go to the government, the King of Laos, on the Prime Minister to agree for him to fight because the country is a nationalist or coalition government. Then Belay asking President Kennedy to invite the King and the Prime Minister to coming to Washington. And the King and the Prime Minister giving green light to the United States to contact directly to General Wang Pao in Northern part of Laos. also after that, the U.S. government giving about full mission for the Hmong and minority Lao that include the Lowland Lao and Yao and all the, and the Lautern to block the Ho Chi Minh Trail to South Vietnam. Number two, to guard the U.S. radar inside Laos. That radar is a pinpoint from the U.S. bomb in Hanoi. Three, to rescue the U.S. pilot who get shot in Hanoi. And each pilot that get shot and down, either alive or dead, the Hmong may lock 10 to 40 people to rescue only one pilot because the computation. The North need the pilot and we don't need a pilot. So it's not easy to rescue one pilot. And number four, to protect Lao to become communist. So during that war, since 1961 to 75, we lost about 35,000 men and women. But mostly, you understand that that war we call secret war, and nobody had the list of the people. But the USCIA report that they have been paid about 35,000 people that benefit. So during 61 to 75, the U.S. worked directly to General Vang Pao and pay salary directly to the soldier not involved with the Laotian government.
Mr. Vang, if you could, we have several other people.
And we fight as a surrogate for the United States. And one Hmong die, that means one American come back home. So in 1975, after U.S. government withdraw from South Vietnam, so on May 1975, 12 o'clock, is the last day that U.S. government airlist General Vang Pao and the U.S. CIA Director Jerry Daniel to Thailand. But that flight will not include me. I was escaped by foot and to Thailand in 1976. I came to America in Minnesota as a third Hmong family in Minnesota. So on March 23rd, 2018, President Trump signed the bill called Hmong Act, Hmong Service Act, to recognize the Hmong, the Special Guerrilla Unit as a veteran, and we have right to bury in the National Cemetery, either in Minnesota or Arlington National Cemetery. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your service, Mr. Vang. And,
yeah, and so Captain Senu will say a few words, and then I will translate.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Captain Senu.
My name is Captain Senu. He's a soldier that served during the Vietnam War.
No, no, go to the na. Yeah, 肯定就坐飞机坐进城，我背着包就在前面赶，飞机去接我。
And I'm here today to ask for your support and help to be recognized for the services that I served along with 35,000 Hmong soldiers in Laos.
只要有多讨厌，但是多讨，肯定就坐飞机能，我到不了多多帮着你，也带了多就一直也就去。
And so, not here today to ask for money or a handout, but just hope to seek recognition for the services of the men and women that, that were lost during the war. And so, 35,000 Hmong soldiers, men, women, and children, fought during the war, and the American CIA paid $3 per soldier to fight in that war.And so they feel that sometimes it felt like the death of one Hmong soldier wasn't even worth the death of an animal. And so today, not for recognition for anything, but for the soldiers that died and aren't able to be here today.And so to recognize the soldiers that died or those that were left behind that died without a name, and a grave, or somewhere to be recognized. Alright, thank you for the time and the opportunity to speak in front of you.
Thank you for your service, Captain Sainu.Thank you for being here, and thank you for waiting through our hearing. I have several people on the list to testify as well. The first one is Scott Walker.
Thank you, Committee. My name is Scott Walker. I'm the director of the Coalition of Allied Vietnam War Veterans. First of all, I want to thank and congratulate Representative Zong for his election and this his first piece of legislation. I sincerely hope that he is successful in this, and we will do what we can to help him along those lines. Although it might be amended. I sincerely believe, and I know many of my colleagues here, I know each one of them, and I've worked with each one of them. They deserve a day. They deserve to be recognized by the state of Minnesota. They deserve a week of days, a month of days, a year of days, a decade of days.For what they have done and what they have contributed historically here in Minnesota as well as in Laos. I have a letter that I'd like to read to you that expresses our feelings and hopefully will make things a little more clear about the role that all of our Asian communities here in Minnesota play. Dear Minnesota state leaders,The United States Military Associations in Minnesota and private citizens listed below would like to express our support of the Hmong Veterans Day legislation introduced in the Minnesota legislature, provided all ethnic veterans receive equal treatment by our state simultaneously. The United States Military and Civilian Agency recruited, trained, and fought secretly.Alongside with many indigenous Southeast Asians during the Vietnam conflict, including the Kampuchea Krom, the many highland tribes known as the Matanyard, the Republic of Korea, Royal Lao Armed Forces, Lao Special Guerrilla Units, Australian and New Zealand SAS, Royal Thai Armed Forces, Republic of Vietnam, Philippine Republic, and the Khmer Republic Armed Forces. all of whom lost many members fighting for freedom and against communist aggression during the Vietnam conflict and secret war in Southeast Asia. Minnesota has welcomed many of these surviving veterans to our state, and we are appreciative of their contributions they have made. Furthermore, many other nations contributed to their effort in Southeast Asia, including Ireland, Canada, Great Britain, Germany, Israel, France, Iran, Republic of China, Malaysia, Liberia, Japan, Pakistan, Turkey, Venezuela, Uruguay, Honduras, Guatemala, Ecuador, Costa Rica, Brazil, Argentina, Switzerland, Spain, Norway, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Italy, Greece, Tunisia, Denmark, Belgium, South Africa, and Morocco, all of whom we presume have ancestors living here in Minnesota. To exclude their contributions would be disrespectful to them and their communities. Few Minnesotans know the essential role these brave veterans played during the Vietnam War. Both the recently released PBS documentary series, The Vietnam War, and our local Twin Cities Public Television Station's documentary program, Minnesota Remembers Vietnam, funded in large part by the citizens of Minnesota, omitted these veterans in their programming. Simply astonishing to us. We were equally distressed by the treatment and promises made to our allies by certain legislative leaders and the governor regarding the installation of a Hmong monument on the state capitol grounds. Many promises were made by several officials that no legislation or special treatment for any one veteran community will be passed and signed unless all foreign national veterans were included. Unfortunately, this did not come to pass. This is yet another example of Americans making promises to these communities not kept. If we might add to the dialogue and the consideration of the legislation, we would prefer each ethnic group receive equal treatment as their service and sacrifices were of equal importance to the effort during the war. If one ethnic veteran community is to be honored with a date important to them and receive an official Veterans Day from Minnesota recognizing their contributions, we think only fair and morally justified a separate day of equal importance be granted to each of the foreign allies as well. We can provide you with a list of dates that correspond with those ethnic Veterans Day of importance. It may be far better, however, to honor these naturalized American veterans who serve with the United States as allies under a foreign national flag with one comprehensive, encompassing Allied Veterans Day. Establishing such a day would be in keeping with American tradition and demonstrate that no one community is more important than another in Minnesota. This day, while having been initiated by the Vietnam-era veterans, honoring Vietnam-era veterans, it would also reach back to previous conflicts and reach forward, honoring all foreign national allies who fought and died with the United States, defending freedom against despotism and tyranny. I think our staff has given you a copy of this letter, and it has over 13 local organizations that signed on to this and numerous veterans, American allied veterans signing on as well.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Walker. Next on the list, I have Dr. Ha Tuong. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. My name is Dr. Ha Tuong. Believe it or not, we are all allies. I am one of the survivors of the Arvin an officer of the Army of the Republic of Vietnam. And I am also an educator in Minnesota. I am the one who started the ESL program, the bilingual program for Minneapolis, starting 1976, serving Hmong, Cambodian, Laotian, Vietnamese, Arabic, Persians. And so I'm here to say one thing, is that Vietnam War is probably one of the most complicated wars, as it's involved many countries. And when I was in the South Vietnamese Army, I did not know but to obey orders until I became a principal in Minneapolis Public Schools. That was when I received the students sent to my office for disciplining. And these are the children of the Vietnam vets. And then I found out that the parents don't talk with their children. I said, I fought in Vietnam War. And I said, so did my father. Did you guys talk about it at home? No. And it became a big question mark in my mind. Until 2009, after I retired from Minneapolis, I participated in the Welcome Home Day to welcome back the brave Vietnam vets. So the Vietnam vets asked me, why are you here? I said, I fought in Vietnam War too. And they said, oh, so you must be Hmong. I started to question why the people think I'm Hmong. And this is the Vietnam vet who asked me that question. And the same question kept repeating, and even my wife, who is a native of Minnesota, she was so surprised. I fought in Vietnam War. I'm Vietnamese American. And so that was when I decided to do more research. So I spent 10 years doing research about the history of the war. It started way in 1953. So that was when Ho Chi Minh started to infiltrate into Laos. Probably not Cambodia yet, but Laos. Why Laos? Because they were thinking about destroying the peaceful country, and of course to use Laos as a way to get infiltration into South Vietnam. And so I also discovered that the news media had probably not misinterpreted, but hidden. I'd say 80% of the truth is hidden. That is why that our coalition of allied Vietnam War veterans decided to have a photo exhibit in the rotunda. I hope that you've seen it. Things that are not shown in English on the internet, things that are not shown in CBS, even the newest PBS series, never talked about it. They didn't talk about the war in Laos, didn't talk about the Cambodian War. But anyway, to make it short, the news media, the internet, has been misleading a lot of our young generations. And I know about it because I've been going to U.S. history classes, world history classes to observe. I've been doing presentation at Brooklyn Park, Park High School, Brook Park Center, to give presentation about the Vietnam War. And I am always inclusive, always talk about the war in Laos, the war in Cambodia, how many millions lives have been sacrificed for no reason. And so I'm very worried about what is taught to our children. And the Vietnamese has been keeping a very low profile. Maybe you have known that. This is probably the first time that you see a whole bunch of us here. It's because traditionally we are taught as a good Confucian, as a good child, we have to keep our mouth shut, not to ask any question, and to be submissive. And so we try to stay low. And staying low doesn't help. It's about time for all of us to come to rise and to be more involved with politics, to support our legislators. And so I promise, and probably you'll hear this from, I cannot talk for the Laotian or the Cambodian community, but the Vietnamese community, that we are going to support you to advance, to help us advance. We've been doing pretty well.
If you could wrap up your right with a few other people.
Yeah, so after 44 years, we realized that we had to recognize everybody together. And we are here to support a day for all of the allies. That would be the most fair, to support all of the allies. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your service, Dr.
Chair,
Fong.
Chair, thank you, committee members. Thank you, Representative Xiong.
Okay, thank you. Next on the list, I have Jerry Kaiser.
Good morning, gentlemen, ladies of Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. We're a 30 veteran organization in the state of Minnesota that are basically a consortium of organizations that deal with the issues of legislations about entitlements and events that for veterans, military retirees, National Guard, military reservists, their dependents, and their survivors. I am a Vietnam disabled combat veteran. I spent two tours there from 1968 to 1970. I volunteered twice. I commend the Hmong. They are wonderful fighters. They are great warriors. They did an immeasurable thing. I'm an aviator. I was a helicopter crew chief machine gunner in the 1st Infantry Division. And my second tour after I recovered from injuries, I went back to do another year in the 1st Aviation Brigade. In doing that, I was interacting with a lot of different allies. The Australians were there in our units. We were ferrying them around. We took all these men and women to their war things, and they're to often see the mud and the blood and the fear. When we'd take them out and we'd bring them back, we'd bring their wounded, take care of their dead. And when I was there, we took care of the Koreans, not me personally, but our aviation units did. The Koreans had 320,000 people there in those years, losing 5,000. The Australians had 65,000. I actually worked with the Australians and the New Zealand groups. Also, the mountain yards were with our friends who were dealing with the special forces. In another event, we had a unit that was in Cambodia with the Kampuchea, the Studies and Observation Group. It was a top secret thing. We were not supposed to talk about that. We were invaded in Cambodia. Eventually, in 1970, they did go into Cambodia, the U.S. Army did. But they were invaluable in dealing with this. Of course, the Vietnamese, we carried them all over the place. They had their own military helicopters provided by us, but they lost 2 million people. The Cambodians lost 2 million people. Although tragic what happened to the Hmong, being misled that they would be supported and abandoned, which I thought was a travesty. The horrendous things that happened to them also happened to the the Vietnamese and the Cambodians, and I support what we're doing here. I think that was great that they brought this up. This needed to be done. However, it needs to have all the Allied veterans in there and use the date of the 30th of June, which we're going to be celebrating General Vesey. He was a champion of all these different organizations, and have that day be the general day, and have the Hmong and all of those together do at the same time. Vietnam Veterans Charity and other veteran organizations will be talking to you about this, but we are organization of 30 veteran groups, of which some will be speaking, will support this to have an amendment when it goes to Representative Eklund's committee. We'd appreciate that, sir. Any questions I'd like to answer?
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I think we'll keep
going.
It's
an honor.
Yep, thank you. Next on the list, I have Mike McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Mike McDonald. I'm a combat Vietnam veteran. Was conscripted at the age of 19 and a combatant later the same year. I had the opportunity to fight alongside, for a brief period of time, the ROKS, which was the Republic of Korea. Recently, in Ennis, Ireland, I had a hand in a memorial dedicated in the memory of 29 men and one woman who were Irish citizens and died in Vietnam. While I applaud my Hmong counter-combatants and fellow combatants in the Vietnamese community, the only thing that bothers me about this bill is the limited scope. So just to be brief, I want to echo my sentiments along with Mr. Walker's and Mr. Kaiser's in that this bill be broadened to include all the allies that fought in Vietnam. Any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you. I think we'll hold questions until the testimony is done.
Thank you.
If there is a question for a specific testifier, we can bring you back. So thank you for your service. Thank you for speaking. Next on the list, I have might be An Bai. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. Vietnamese Armed Forces. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and all members. My name is An Bui, a former Vietnamese pilot during the Vietnam War. And now he retired U.S. Postal Service. Today I come here to testify about honors the fighter groups in Vietnam War. As everybody know, how bad this war causes like 58,000 American lives in Vietnam, 1,000 more from different countries to help South Vietnamese people. Besides that, we have millions of Vietnamese, both North and South, have been died after 20 years of war. Cut it short for today, I'd like to request this committee to honor all the country and the allies that involved, including Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for your service, Mr. Bui. John Flores, I have on the list. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and committee, thank you for allowing me a few moments. I will be brief. I'm John Flores, State Commander of AMVETS, and we come to support House File 919. for many reasons. Our veterans fought alongside these wonderful people, and it's only fitting that they have their day. We have other days that we celebrate. My great Irish friend over here, we celebrate St. Patty's Day and Cinco de Mayo, and we celebrate a lot of things. But we should never forget to celebrate our veterans, especially our great allies. It's important. When we forget our allies, we forget our veterans. And soon we forget a piece of ourselves. It's important not only for them, but it's important for all of us. Oftentimes, people will say, not only to me, but to other veterans, thank you for your service. And I say thank you. But please live your life that's worthy of the sacrifice that we put in. Many people, you know, we all throw out the word patriot, and we think of New England and Tom Brady. But the patriots, hey, the patriots are those who served and put it on the line, and many didn't come home. Many came home, as you well know, minus pieces and parts, and their lives are forever changed. Anyone who served, your life is forever changed. And I pledge to you that I hope that you will pass this unanimously, and I hope that when you tell a veteran, thank you for your service, live up to that. Live up to that. Be worthy of their sacrifice and the sacrifice of these wonderful gentlemen sitting here. My brother served in Vietnam two tours, many of my relatives and friends. It's like the whole neighborhood went. And I'm sure they had interactions, and they served proudly. So please, please, pass this legislation. But I also agree with some of the sentiment that we should celebrate a Veterans Day for all veterans, especially our allies. And we need to widen the scope. But somehow, that's for another day. But for today, I ask your support to pass this legislation. Thank you.
I will say thank you for your service, and I will try to live my life in a way that's consistent with the sacrifice. So thank you. That is all the people I have. That is all the people I have signed up for testimony. Yes, I do see somebody else. So welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Actually, was on the list, but some of them.
My apologies.
No. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. This is, I think it's very personal to many people who have spoken today.
Could you please introduce yourself?
Tom Diamond, mm-hmm. Legislative Director for DFL Veterans Caucus. Okay. And I'm just saying that this is very personal to many people, and it's certainly personal to me. I'm a disabled American veteran. I live in St. Paul, where we have a huge veteran population. And I'm very thankful for that. I had the good fortune of serving on the city council in St. Paul when many of our Hmong veterans were coming to St. Paul. And it was really wonderful working with them to encourage them and enable them to be part of this mosaic, which is Minnesota. And one of the things that hasn't been talked about here, but I think is a real credit to the Hmong population, Minnesota as a whole, and certainly cities like St. Paul. Because if you know the history of Hmong settlement in the United States, it was spread out quite widely throughout the United States. And to our good fortune, many of the resettlements were to Minnesota, because they found Minnesota to be a great place to live, welcoming, and they added greatly to our community, and they brought that voice out to the rest of the community, encouraged people to come here. And I'm really thankful that they did that. And I think when you take one of the things that when we're working with resettlement, is an important piece of that was to actually listen to the people as to what their needs were, not what we thought might be the needs or what might be appropriate, as well-intended as that may be. And as part of this, I strongly support this legislation, and I certainly support any recognition to any other group that wants it. But I think it's also important that, as you know, sometimes with young children, the habit is, in some cases, is to give an award to everyone just so everybody's gotten an award. And when it becomes a generic award for everybody, I fear that the it somehow dilutes the significance of recognizing the specific roles that different parties play. All those roles were important, but I think we need to, and I don't say that as what I believe, because it's not relevant what my opinion is on this issue. What I am trying to reflect is all the people who have welcomed me into their home. We've had gatherings together. I've had the great chance to meet General Van Powell on a number of occasions. For those who haven't had the blessing to be part of this community, I can tell you it's a great experience. They are very open, very warming, and inclusive. And so in those conversations, this has always been a prime point, is that they would like to have recognition for what they have done. That is not a takeaway from what anybody else has done, and they should get their due. But I just would like to pass along what has been told to me over the years and from such wonderful people that I think we ought to listen to them and consider giving them the honor for their day. We have 365 of them, so I think we can share them around. So thanks very much for taking the time.
Yep. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak on this bill? Welcome. Yep. If you could come forward. If you could please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sir, my name is Robert Pike. I represent Chapter 20 of the Special Forces Association. This is our magazine, and the magazine has all of our chapters listed in here. There's 87 chapters, and there's about 40 people per chapter. Some have more, some have less. I'm also a member of the Canadian Vietnam Veterans Association that's based in Toronto. I agree with this legislation. I think it should be put through. I think also it should be added that we are celebrating all of our veterans and not just the Lao. The Lao are good. We're all like them. There's no problem with that. But you have to understand one thing. The men on this side of the room and the men on this side of the room fought for cause. They did not die for sport. And I'd like to point out that in the future, wars are going to be fought, and we're going to need allies on our side if we want to make it through. We got to have people who are going to tell us, don't go down that alley, because you're in for it if you do. And I think if those people know that we honor those veterans and we honor those people who come to us and help us, that we can survive just about anything. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for speaking. Is there anybody else? Welcome. If you could please come down and state your name for the record. Oh, sorry, there's two.
Excuse me.
You could come down too and then maybe just be ready to go. Yep, and if you could keep
I didn't going. Know. Jim McKee, just a person that was in the gallery today for other reasons. I didn't know that these fine gentlemen were going to be here. I appreciate this 15 seconds. I was a young fighter pilot that flew over the PDJ in support of these guys. A couple of my wingmen were shot down. They were surrounded by these great guys who were young then as well, and that's the reason that they were able to be extracted, by Air America. So I only take time to say thank you very much for them and for your support of them.
Yeah. Thank you for speaking. I appreciate it. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Steele. Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kusal Sek. I'm the Managing Director of the National Khmer Legacy Museum. We are the only museum outside of Cambodia focusing on the legacy of the Khmer people, promoting, preserving, protecting genocide survivors using the Cambodian stories, personal stories and histories as lessons learned so that we don't repeat it in America, as well as reviving some of the forgotten stories, forgotten arts, forgotten culture. As you know, we live in the land of 10,000 smiles, and there are 10,000 ways to express our love. I'm reminded back in 2012 when we had, I believe it was House File 2317, it was might have been a simple resolution recognizing, affirming the contributions of the Hmong, the Laos, the Montagnards, the South Vietnamese, the Cambodians, for the sacrifices made for defending American troops. Myself, I was born in 1974, so I'm an expert in genocide suffering. The simple resolution passed in 2012, we took that simple idea to the Senate level in D.C., and for the first time in my life, at that time I was a volunteer in community service, saw these men, the South Vietnamese, the Cambodians, the Laotians, came together, walked down Canaan Hall, went through metal detectors. As you know, a lot of these men are very proud about the services that they defended, the country who they defended. So it's not an easy task. Many of these guys, some of these guys didn't pass the metal detectors. They couldn't walk a straight line. Some were in their wheelchairs. And it woke me up for the first time as a genocide survivor. I'm reminded that there are many stories, there are many forgotten heroes, and I'm in complete support of this House File number 919 with a small amendment in that we worked so hard as a coalition of Southeast Asians to seek recognition for all Southeast Asians, and if we were to spotlight just one group, it would be a reverse in progress. We've been working on this for almost 10 years. I believe it would be a hiccup in progress if we were to just focus on one particular group, because I know and I love our brothers and sisters on this side as much as these guys on this side here. And one of the questions I always get asked is, God, you're so young to be a managing director of a museum. And my response is, I'm a genocide survivor. Those older than myself have died. So please, this day that we're seeking, I would be in favor of a Freedom Fighter Day, because all of us are freedom fighters. Representative over here is a freedom fighter. Chairman, you're a freedom fighter. I'm a freedom fighter for the values that we defend and the values that we will defend in the future. Maybe it's a forgotten Patriot Day. Regardless of the adjectives that we come up with, it's a day that we need to remember and a day that we need to include everybody who believes in the values that the land of 10,000 smiles believe in. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to speak? Okay, welcome. I may need to start enforcing the time limits a little stronger because
just really quickly, Mr. Chair.
Sure, Representative.
At this point, we are about 30 minutes over our time.
Yes.
And so I'm just wondering if we're going to be able to, I don't mean to limit testimony or cut people off, but at some point in respect to members that have made commitments to be other places or to meet with other people, we're going to have to, at some point, either move to a vote, move to table this for another day, or announce that we're going to come back to take action on this evening.
I understand.
But We gotta do something soon.
Okay, I understand. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and committee, my name is Terry Kivioya. I'm president of Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity. I'm also a member of Vietnam Veterans of America. I served in Vietnam in July 1969 to July 1970 with the 101st Airborne Division. Our area of operation was from the south of the DMZ to just north of Da Nang and from Hue to the Laotian border. During my time in Vietnam, we had the opportunity to train ARVN troops, which was the Army of the Republic of South Vietnam. I support this this legislation totally, with one exception. I would like to see it include all of our allies, whether that's South Vietnamese, Cambodians, as well as our Hmong, Lao, Mountain Yards, all of the allies that fought with us during that time frame in Vietnam. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Yes, sir. If you could please come forward, state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for all the men who service in to defense South Vietnam against communist aggression from the north. I am Thomas Cao, president of the Vietnamese community here in Minnesota. I'm here today to testify on behalf of our community. I was born and raised in Vietnam and having lived through the war against communist aggression from the north, I'm here to testify to help on behalf of our community that the war in Vietnam was fought by many allies, the Hmong, Republican of Khmer, the Royal Laos Army, and of course the Army Republican of Vietnam, South Korea, Australia, etc. And of course we have a lot the Americans help us during the war. You see all the Vietnam vets here. So we feel that if we are going to have a bill to recognize, we should include all the groups that is not that was fought during the war, and it's just not fair to recognize just one group and just ignore the rest. So we suggest Vietnam era Ally Day to recognize all the allies who fought during the Vietnam and to fight against communist aggression from the North, Vietnam, and China. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else? I'm seeing, not seeing anybody. I do have three members on the list here. I will close testimony. Representative Heinrich, you are first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I'll be brief. Thank you, Representative Zhang, for what you're doing. I just wanted to, as a military veteran myself, served in the Marine Corps, two tours in Iraq, I just wanted to extend a heartfelt thanks to all the veterans that are here today and take this opportunity to just say that it is that when the United States pulled out of Vietnam, the people of Southeast Asia did face major persecution. And if they didn't die, they would face that persecution if they weren't just outright killed. And they were forced re-education seminar camps when that American support ended by the communists. And so a special thanks to the Special Guerrilla Unit and all the people that helped fight against the communist regime there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich, and thank you for your service. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a very great thank you to the wonderful warriors present here and those that can't be present here. On behalf of the veterans in my area and family, this is very touching because one of my uncles was a medic in Vietnam, and his wife lived with us while he was stationed. What he did talk about was very impactful. What he couldn't talk about probably was more so. So any occasion that we as a state and as a people can honor the wonderful warriors that fought and sacrificed for freedom and against enslavement by an omnipotent government, we should do. And I just wish there was more we could do to honor what you and your comrades have done for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rong, thank you for bringing this forward too, and for acknowledging that for many of us, we wouldn't be here without the sacrifices of these brave men and women who are behind us. And just personally for me, you know, I always remember the story my dad tells me that during the Secret War, being enlisted as a young man, you know, 16 or 17, carrying a rifle, and was just getting out there, didn't know what to expect, but just following orders. And when I see these gentlemen behind me, it brings me back to those stories. And for me, I'm just so proud of the contribution that they have to our country and our state and bringing us forward. So I just want to say thank you to that. And just for the members, I have the pages passed around. Just a handout that has some of our state observances, and as you look through the handout, there are 8 related observances that are veterans or armed service related, and I just wanted to point out that we have observances for, you know, Higher Veteran Month, Military Spouses, Medal of Honor Day, Combat Wounded Veterans, and then just last year we passed the law, Atomic Veterans Day. And when we start thinking about how start talking about this idea of the limited scope, what Representative Zhang is doing here is to highlight the contribution that the gentlemen behind me are, their contribution to the Secret War, a war that was in addition to the Vietnam War. And I really want us to look at, you know, the gravity of the situation, where the National Archive, I believe the data from them, have indicated that there was about 58,000 U.S. military casualty, and one of our testifiers has said that for the Hmong community, 35, that's over 60% or 60% more than 60% of the casualty that the U.S. have in the war. And so I just want you to recognize that, and that I understand the testimony from the other Southeast Asian allies too, and I offer this to you as a legislator around the table and for Representative Zhang too, that our doors are always open if you do want to come and have a conversation for us to recognize our Southeast Asian allies for their contribution in the Vietnam War. And just wanted to put it on the record that, Mr. Chair, I have introduced this bill, you know, since 2017, and it has been out there, and I haven't heard many of these discussion topic about expanding that, other than the day of my testimony when I had it back with Chair Detmer, where my bill was laid over, and until today, I haven't had anybody reach out to me. And so I really want to understand why, if we are thinking about expanding this, I'm open to expanding this and, you know, introducing legislation to recognize all of our allies. Why is it that today, when we have these service members here, that we are having this conversation? So I just want members to know that, you know, and also highlight that for the Hmong people here in the state of Minnesota, we do not have a homeland. You know, we're an indigenous group that are derived from southwest, southeast China, all the way down to the mountains of Southeast Asia. And for us, not having a homeland, but, you know, fighting for American democracy and, you know, just joining forces, you know, to really advance what we see as American ideals and really leading us here today, I think that is enough for us to recognize the significance of the contribution that they have made to the country, and for the recognition of why we needed to have them recognized here in the state of Minnesota. And I just want to add real quickly, Mr. Chair, that the service members of the Hmong and Lao veterans during the Secret War has been recognized at the U.S. congressional level, and oftentimes being led by, you know, Republican Congress members under Republican leadership at the U.S. Congress. And so I just want to note that, you know, this is a bipartisan support issue, and I do want to thank Representative Heinrich for signing on, and Representative Lloyd this year and when I first introduced it in 2017. And I just really want us to really consider that, you know, we do have allies out there, but do we, when we have bills that comes before us, like the bill in 2018, do we go through this length of trying to include everyone into one where, you know, what we're trying to do is to highlight the significance of, you know, particular contribution to the state and to the country. So I'll just leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the time. First of all, I just want to say thank you to everyone for your service. It doesn't matter to a lot of us where you come from or what you did. It just matters that you were there. My uncle served in Thailand. But I learned most when my husband is a hot air balloon pilot and I'm a crew chief, and we worked with Freedom Flight, which works with the POW/MIA folks, and we met a lot of veterans, mostly Vietnam veterans. And you guys are pretty quiet. You don't talk a lot, and you need to do that, because I truly had no clue until today all the different groups that are affected. Your challenge is to, as Representative Lee said, you need to come to us, and we need to fix this because it is so important to us. In St. Cloud, we do have Vietnam Memorial, and it has both Vietnamese and our United States soldiers, and there is a celebration that we go and we actually recognize it, but it needs to get expanded. I see that now, but we don't know it unless you all tell us. We don't, it shouldn't be quiet. I mean, I've lost so many friends because of whether they were injured in Vietnam. Dear friend, he lost most of his arm. And I saw him one day, and it was election. It was one of our election summers. And he was sitting with a group of Vietnam veterans, and they said, "Hey, how you doing?" And I said, "I'm doing fine." And they said, "Anybody bothering you? Because you just let us know, and we'll take care of them for you." So still protecting us. Still protecting us. And we lost him several years ago, and I've lost several other friends. But you need to tell us. You really need to tell us what we need to do. And I'm so happy that Representative Zhang and Representative Lee are here to do that. And we need to continue. I do have one issue, though, Mr. Chair. I think I remember when Representative Lee first came to our committee and he brought his treats. They were not sweets. They were awesome. Awesome. Were they egg rolls? Or something like that?
Representative Lee?
Awesome.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay, Representative Tice.
And I think it was brought up in another committee that part of bringing the treats is also sharing who you are. Not that I'm saying you need to do it, but, you know, a lot of us take that treat sharing is a way for us to learn who you are. I want to jump on Representative Nash's little thing you owe him. And that's part of how we learn. Is part of the tree cherry. So that's just my thing about that. But I can never thank our veterans enough. I learned so much flying a hot air balloon when folks said, "This is the closest I'm going to be to my loved one until I die." It was the best thing. It was the worst thing. And I'm still emotional. But thank you. Thank you for everyone here today.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank all of the veterans here. Fantastic service. You have our gratitude. But I would also be remiss in not also thanking your families. I'm a Navy dad, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we're really on a time crunch over here. It's
correct. I don't
know if you wanted to extend the time or not, but I'm just going to say two things. One is, I lived through the time of the Vietnam War, and it was an incredibly controversial time, and we are still trying to deal with the scars from that time. And I also was in Minnesota when the Hmong started coming here, and I remember being at the airport. I mean, there would be these huge delegations to greet the people that were coming off the plane. I mean, it was incredibly impressive. And then about a year or so ago, our Minnesota Humanities had a big program about Cambodia on April 17th. And somehow, I don't know whether I've forgotten this stuff or we didn't know it, but I think I am learning more about that period over the last couple of years. So there's a lot for us to discuss, but again, you know, for the people that served, thank you very much.
Representative Bonner.
I'll try to keep this brief. I just want to say, you know, as the daughter of several servicemen, or granddaughter, I'm sorry, and one who's currently in the Marines at Camp Jean Lune right now, I just can't thank the veterans here today enough for their time, for their service and their efforts, the sacrifices they've made. And I want to bring something up because I think I have a slightly unique perspective. I had the privilege of growing up with a best friend who was Thai and Lao. And I have to tell you something about the folks in this room, the folks behind me, the folks over here. The Southeast Asian people, the Hmong people, are very proud, but they're also very humble. They are not people who seek credit. They don't seek recognition. They don't look for those kinds of things. And it is for precisely that reason that we need to be here today to honor their contributions, to raise up our voices and thank them for their service, because in many cases, they will not advocate for themselves, for all of the hard work and dedication they have done. And I just want to bring that to everyone's attention. That is not something that is common in their culture to do. And so I think it's more important than anything that we do that. And while I certainly agree that all of our neighbors here deserve recognition, I want to make sure that we say that I don't believe that having a day that celebrates our Hmong veterans here diminishes the contributions of any of the other groups in any way, shape, or form. But I do think that we need to be conscientious and make sure that we honor those contributions. And so it is for that reason that I will be supporting this measure today, and I certainly hope others will as well. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Bonner. I don't have any other members on the list, so Representative Zhang, would you like to make any closing remarks?
So I know we're well over time, but I just want to thank you for this opportunity to hear this bill, and would like to thank the veterans that took the time to come here and to be a part of this. And I just want to close out by echoing what Representative Lee mentioned. You know, I hope that by passing this bill, you know, we're not overlooking or excluding anybody, but we just want to recognize these veterans for a specific service that they provided. Yes, we do not have a Hmong homeland. When I was born here, raised here, and my grandfather told us, you know, there's no bigger, stronger country than America. So there's no home, no other home, nowhere else we're going. America is our land. And so I just want to reiterate that and let you know, like, these gentlemen here, and like people like my grandfather, my father, like, we can't go back. We are on the list. We cannot go back to Laos. And so America is our land, and I hope that you would recognize and pass this bill as is. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. And thank you, everyone who testified, and thank you for your patience in waiting through the other bills as well as waiting through this one. And thank you, members, for your indulgence in staying late. So I will renew my motion that House File 919, as amended, be re-referred to the Veterans and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Thank you, Representative Zhang. Your bill is on its way. Members, before you leave, I have two quick items of business I want to mention. So Representative Claflin's bill, House File 1017, is on the agenda. Representative Claflin was double-booked presenting a bill in another committee, which also ran late. So we will reschedule that as promptly as we can. So there is an additional item of business. This is a little strange. I ran it by you, Representative Zerwas, beforehand.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, Chair Freiberg contacted me about needing to remove a bill that came.
If you could be quick, I can explain it too if you want. I'm a little more familiar with it.
Mr. Chair, they give you a wooden thing to tap when you're the chair.
Yes. If everyone could please be quiet, we do have just a couple committee things to finish here. So House File 300 is Representative Pinto's bill that we heard a couple weeks ago. It would it relates to contests of procurement actions, requiring them to be heard in the district court rather than the Court of Appeals. I thought there might be a financial component to that, so I referred it to the Ways and Means Committee. There was a fiscal note requested, and it came back just recently with no fiscal impact. So if members are okay with it, I would like to reconsider that motion and then move that it be referred directly to the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee, since it is a policy bill. So with that understanding, I will make that motion. Is there any discussion? Okay. All those in favor of reconsidering it, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, the motion to reconsider it is before us. I will now move that House File 300 be referred directly to the Committee on, I should probably make sure I get it right this time, Judiciary and Civil Law Division, I think it is. So Representative Lesch's committee, let's just call it that. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you. And then we have a fairly full, just so members are aware, we have a fairly full agenda for Tuesday as well. It is possible we'll run late, but there is also the possibility for evening hearings, if that's what members prefer.
Yeah. And, Mr. Chair, I guess from my more minority perspective, what we would request is, while there may be bills in which multiple testifiers are necessary and there may be bills that require robust discussion, in my experience, over the last several years, there's a lot of bills that come through here as a matter of automatic need to come through this committee and automatic referral that probably don't need multiple testifiers and multiple in great lengths of time. And so it'd be our request that you work with bill authors to limit the number of testifiers that they would have in support of their bills so we get additional information, not repetitive information, and so that we're not here till midnight on Tuesday would be awesome.
Thank you, Representative Zerbaz. I will do my best. I have been letting testifiers know that the bill we just heard is a fairly good example where there's a lot of unexpected testimony, and I do want to make sure people have an opportunity to speak. But perhaps when that does occur, I will also be more strict about the time limits.
It'll be a long 3 weeks.
Yes, it will be. So thank you. With that, this committee is adjourned.